Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 24th. Mayor Patrick Payton, I will be a voice for a safe, secure Midland. This is commentary. Last week, Governor Greg Abbott rolled out a new phase in opening Texas after the COVID-19 lockdowns of the past several months. During his press conference, the governor stated the following: safe practices are the best protection. Personal vigilance is still critically important. Not all places in Texas are affected the same. Midland could open up to 75% except bars if their hospital census for COVID was below 15%. Ours is at 3%. The people of Midland have done the actions of the first two bullet points with passion, and given the status of Midland on the last two bullet points, I felt it necessary to let our local businesses know they had my full support to do what they felt they needed to do to open up and serve their customers. My boldness in making this statement boils down to one very important point. Ever since March, we have resisted mandates and instead called on the people of Midland to understand the danger and challenge and respond accordingly. To date, Midlanders have heroically responded, and our numbers prove it. My great concern with what has come out of Austin over the last 7 months is not the calls to action as much as the manner in which these calls have been made. In the midst of the greatest collective health crisis our state and city has faced in a lifetime, it seemed only right to me that a special session of the legislature should have been called in order to facilitate a reasonable statewide response. Remember, not all places in Texas are affected the same. My actions at the local level are always accountable to the city council. At the state level, our elected representatives should be able to hold the governor accountable. If not all of Texas has been affected the same, then each place in Texas ought to be able to manage its affairs in a way that protects and provides for the good of its residents. The protection and provision of the great people of Midland has been made possible because we have trusted you, and you have more than delivered. But even as I choose to push back at what is being pushed down on us, we must all still remain vigilant and committed to protect and provide for one another as we have proven we can. My warning to businesses was that I could not protect them from state regulatory agencies, but would do all I could to be a voice for them as they seek to save their businesses in a safe and responsible manner. Each will make the call as they deem worthwhile. But as our business community decides what they must do, we must likewise continue to do what we have done. Simply put, we must remain aware, vigilant, and responsive in order to demonstrate that a free people who treasure their liberty can do what is necessary for their provision and protection absent state mandates. We are not out of the COVID nightmare. Our city, hospital, health department, and others have been doing an amazing job in partnership with Midlanders to fight back against COVID. Now, as we fight to safely open and do what we must do for ourselves, let's keep our guard up, fight for one another's safety, and show that opening the doors of business does not mean opening the door to another dangerous outbreak. Together, we can open up if we continue to do for others what we wish they would do for us. This is who we are, and this is what we do best out here in West Texas. Lee football coach says school name Turmoil will bring kids together. Lee head football coach Clint Hartman addressed the renaming of Lee High School during an impassioned speech given to the community at meet the rebels on Wednesday at Rebel Field. Last week, the Citizens Renaming Committee decided Legacy of Equality and Excellence, LEE, will be the number one selection presented to the MISD School Board to replace Robert E. Lee High School. Hartman said he felt the need to speak on behalf of his players and show support for them because some have been the target of opposition toward the name. Last week, a local television station posted a video on social media of Rebels quarterback Mickey Serrano saying, quote, "The Rebels are back," unquote. Hartman said Serrano received negative reaction from people on social media as far away as Ohio. Quote, "Our kids have had to deal with some things that they shouldn't be right now, but they are," Hartman told the crowd. "When we had a change in plans and they were told the name was going to change, the first question that came up was, what are we going to be? Can we still say we're the Rebels, coach? And yes, I got permission. We're the Midland League Rebels, at least the rest of this year." Quote, "More questions have come up like, why are they trying to divide us, coach? Why are they trying to divide family? And their voices need to be heard," end quote. Hartman's speech, which was given at the lead-up to Lee's Friday season opener against Amarillo High, was centered around how his players of all different backgrounds come together around a common bond when they enter the Larry Hall Fieldhouse. Quote, "The thing that I want to make sure that everybody understands is that these young men are our future and these young women are our future," Hartman said. "And some of us in the past have had some really bad things to deal with. Our history hasn't been the greatest, and I can't really do anything about that, nor can they. But this generation can do something." Quote, "We talked about why don't we act a little bit nicer to each other? Why don't we hold doors open for each other? Why aren't we more like the locker room where nobody cares about socioeconomic status or race or color or gender? Why aren't we like that more in the world?" End quote. Hartman says the athlete's voice hasn't been heard in the renaming process, citing a poll that showed that 80% of students at Lee High School, Lee Freshman, and Alamo and Abel Junior Highs supporting to keep some form of Lee. Hartman added that Confederate General Robert E. Lee is never mentioned among his kids. Quote, "Just yesterday, I took a young man in my car. He said, coach, why are they messing with us?" Hartman said, "I said, son, I don't know. But I can tell you this, here we love all. When these kids hear the chants, Rebels, Rebels, they don't hear Robert E. Lee. We've never said that word around here. We hear the Midland Lee Rebels. They hear about all the pride and the legacy that's been here, the great players, the great situations, the great school," end quote. Hartman said a friend of his came into his office recently with a Martin Luther King shirt with the caption, "I have a dream." Hartman said that dream has come true in the locker rooms and halls of Lee, and he sees it every day where Lee students and faculty love all people. Hartman vowed the outside commotion over the school name will bring his team closer together. Quote, "If you've never been in the locker room, you don't really get it," Hartman said. "And sometimes that locker room voice can move mountains just like love. So when I told them when all this happened, we'll love our way through it. We're going to tighten our walls, and we're going to get our butts together, and we're going to play good football," end quote. Former Midland College student wants to take leadership baton. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Scott Lynch appreciates all that Midland College leaders have done for decades and now is ready to take the baton. Lynch, a former Midland College student, is running for the Place 8 seat on the school's Board of Trustees. His opponent is Ralph Way, whose 42 years of service make him the longest-serving member on the board. Midland College's seats are at-large positions, so a person can run for any seat, and all eligible voters within the college district vote on each place. The election is set for November 3rd. Early voting is set to begin on October 13th. Lynch is a lease manager with CrownQuest Operating and a licensed real estate agent with Keller Williams. He told the Reporter Telegram that he represents the change in Midland demographics as demonstrated by the community's median age of 31. He said he can bring a fresh perspective and better represent Midland's current population and college students. Lynch's priorities start with turning Midland College into a more modern and technologically focused institution. He told the Reporter Telegram that the next generation of students required that technology before, but the COVID-19 pandemic has heightened that need. Lynch also said that today's job requirements are rapidly changing and that Midland College's focus on high-tech, cutting-edge education and training has to keep up. He also stated that Midland College can maintain a supportive environment of student success that represents West Texas values. Quote, "I want to help forward the legacy of Midland College for my children, the children of Midland, and generations to come," Lynch said. Lynch said his time serving Midland College through student government gave him unique insight into the future possibilities for the college and also instilled in him what a gem the college is to the city and the residents of Midland. Quote, "Midland fuels America, and Midland College helps fuel our workforce," Lynch said. Lynch serves on the board of the George Bush Childhood Home and volunteers with All Pro Dads, which encourages father involvement in local schools. He volunteered as a youth mentor with Teen Flow for many years. Lynch can be contacted at scott4mc@gmail.com or through his Facebook page at scott4mc. City moves forward with process of replacing city manager. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. The Midland City Council on Tuesday selected an interim city manager, taking the first step in replacing Courtney Sharp, who served as city manager for 12 years and resigned earlier this month following health issues. Council members voted Tuesday to select Assistant City Manager Robert Patrick as interim city manager. In an interview after the executive session, Mayor Patrick Payton says he expects Patrick to serve in an interim capacity for the rest of the year, and the council will move forward in 2021 with selecting someone to take over the role more permanently. Payton said that Patrick would be considered for city manager if he expressed interest in the position. If Patrick does not become city manager, Payton said the council would consider hiring a search firm to help fill the position. Quote, "If we move forward, if Mr. Patrick doesn't become the city manager after the process, we'd probably take our search throughout the nation," he said. "Do the things we've always tried to do here in Midland, which is find the best for the job around the nation," end quote. There's no timeline for filling the position if the hiring process moves forward after the first of the year, Payton said. Quote, "We're very confident in what Mr. Patrick can do regardless of how long a decision takes," he said. Patrick has served as assistant city manager for 4 years and worked for the city for 10 years, previously as a general services director and as an assistant to the city manager. He said he is considering applying for the position in a long-term capacity and that whoever is selected following Sharp will have big shoes to fill. Scott Dufford, the longest-serving member on the council, stated this week in an email that he wants to see a person of faith with a real conviction for whatever they believe in, someone who exudes honesty and integrity that can quickly gain the trust of the council and the city staff, end quote. Dufford was one of two members of the council involved in the hiring of Sharp more than a decade ago. Quote, the person doesn't need to be a type A personality, but rather just someone who can implement and carry out the priorities of the council while working well with others, Dufford wrote. Some projects that Patrick said he is looking forward to working on while he serves as interim city manager are water and wastewater system improvements, two new fire stations that are under construction, and the $100 million road bond the city has 3 years to complete. Quote, there is a lot to do already, and absolutely we're looking to the future, he said. Peyton said Patrick and others in the city manager's office have assisted him greatly during his first year as Midland's mayor. Quote, watching them and how they've helped with COVID, how they've helped with the financial crisis, that's really helped me to be able to do this job, he said. As long as they continue with that communication, keeping myself and the city council in the loop, which they have done so well in this very intense time, that's what gives us confidence, and that's what helps us to be able to move forward with confidence, end quote. Patrick's annual salary as interim city manager will be $221,000. City reports 82nd COVID-related death. The city of Midland reported 22 new coronavirus cases and the county's 82nd COVID-19-related death. The city reported Wednesday that a male in his 60s passed away Tuesday. He was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital and was described as having underlying health conditions. His death is the first one announced by the city this week. The city announced 22 confirmed cases Wednesday. That brings the total up to 85 this week, the most through Wednesday going back to the week of September 2nd. The Midland Health Department also reported 1,135 active cases inside Midland County, an increase of 6 compared to Tuesday, and 2,216 recovered, an increase of 15. There have been 3,636 total coronavirus cases during the pandemic. MISD, 11 more cases reported through Monday. Midland ISD reported another 11 coronavirus cases from Saturday through Monday, including 5 from Lee High School and 2 from Midland High. The cases, employees or students, bring the total to 21 since September 15th and 39 this month. The number of employees or students testing positive for coronavirus since June 22nd is up to 93, according to the district. Since September 15th, there have been 9 cases, or 42% of the 21 reported since September 15th, on the Lee campus. There have been 3 on the Midland High campus and another 3 involving students or employees at both Midland High and the Advanced Technology Center. Other cases reported between Saturday and Monday involved either employees or students on the Midland Freshman High School, South Elementary, or Jones Elementary. 10 of the 11 cases were reported on Monday, according to the district. None of those cases required the closure of a campus. The district reported last week that its tracking of coronavirus cases by campus also would include students who tested positive. The district in the past few weeks has started to bring students back on campus as part of its phase-in program for reentry. Midland ISD has said that, quote, each notification triggers a series of steps, which includes sanitizing and disinfecting, notification of individuals in close proximity, and notification to the health department. Anytime we become aware of an individual with a confirmed case who was present at a public gathering, such as a board meeting or sporting event, we will also issue a press release. End quote.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 24, 2020. To Kill a Mockingbird. Dress rehearsal for Midland Community Theater's production, To Kill a Mockingbird, is shown September 15. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, the performance is presented in Reader's Theater format, with the characters in costume and reading from a seated position. The show continues this weekend. Candidate Forums. The Reporter Telegram will host Facebook forums for Midland ISD candidates on October 13 and 15. Each group of candidates will get about an hour each. On October 13, forums will be held for Districts 1 and 4. On October 15, forums will be held for Districts 7 and 2. As of this time, the forums are broadcast events only. The Negro Business and Professional Women's Club of Midland will hold a candidate forum at 11:30 a.m. Saturday at the MLK Center, 2100 Butternut. The forum is for Midland ISD and Midland College candidates. The event also is hosted by the League of Women's Voters and the District 2 Ad Hoc Committee. Masks are required. Basin PBS will have an MISD candidate debate at 7 p.m. on October 8 and a District 11 congressional debate at 7 p.m. on October 12. Health Department is providing services. The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Health Department will have immunization clinics 8:15 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday. Appointments are required for immunizations. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613. Honoring Law Enforcement. The Honor the Blue Rally to Honor Law Enforcement will take place October 17 in Odessa and October 24 in Midland. The event in Odessa will take place inside Barn A of the Ector County Coliseum. The event in Midland will take place in the parking lot at Momentum Bank Ballpark. Both events are slotted for 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Online, honorthe.blue.today. Hospice seeks volunteer artists. These select area volunteer opportunities and events are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. For more information, visit mssconnections.org. Hospice of Midland is looking for artists to paint on the facility's windows. The hours are flexible, supplies will be provided. Contact Volunteer Coordinator Alice Guzman at 682-2855 or AGUZMAN at hospiceofmidland.org. Gifts of Hope has multiple ongoing volunteer needs and upcoming volunteer needs for events. Pink the Park Flag Display, October 1 through 31. Pink the Park Event, October 17. Pink the Park Flamingo Flock Tribute Display. Contact Fatima at 218-8714. Midland County Public Library is looking for volunteers for cataloging at Downtown Branch and circulation at Centennial Branch. Call 688-4325. When it's open, Midland County Public Library, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. Curbside pickup at Downtown Branch, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. City watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the watering schedule from 2 days a week to 4 days a week. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The Utilities Department says residents should not overwater the lawn and should watch for puddles or runoff from sprinklers. Today in history, Today's Thursday, September 24, the 268th day of 2020. There are 98 days left in the year. On this date, in 1955, President Dwight D. Eisenhower suffered a heart attack while on vacation in Denver. In 1976, former hostage Patricia Hearst was sentenced to 7 years in prison for her part in a 1974 bank robbery in San Francisco carried out by the Sibonese Liberation Army. Hearst was released after 22 months after receiving clemency from President Jimmy Carter. In 1988, members of the Eastern Massachusetts Episcopal Diocese elected Barbara C. Harris, the first female bishop in the church's history.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, September 24th. Fred Douglas Dotson, age 83, a resident of Alpine, Texas, passed away at his residence on Monday, September 21st. Mr. Dotson was born in Stamford, Texas, on September 15, 1937. He owned and operated Dotson Nissan from 1969 to 2002. He was preceded in death by his parents, Jake and Molly Dotson, and one brother, Jimmy Jack, who passed away several years ago. He is survived by his wife of 64 years, June White Dotson, his daughter Maureen, son-in-law David Lewis, grandson Marlon Dotson Wall, great-grandson Gavin Wall, and daughter Ruby. In lieu of flowers, the family asked to please donate to the animal charity of your choice. Private services will be held at a later date. Alpine Memorial Funeral Home has been entrusted with his services. Online condolences may be made at www.alpinememorialfuneralhome.com. Mary Borrego, age 72, of Midland, passed away on Monday, September 21st, surrounded by her family. A viewing will be held from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary recited at 7 p.m. Thursday, September 24th, at the branch at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home of Midland. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, September 25th, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Mary was born on August 11, 1948, in Saginaw, Michigan, to Trinidad and Jesus Valdez. She met the love of her life, F.H. June Borrego, at the age of 16 years old. She was married to her soulmate for 49 years. Mary is survived by her children, Rebecca Franco, Craig Borrego, David Borrego, and Valida Trejo, 13 grandchildren and 13 great-grandchildren. Her brothers and sisters, Jesus Valdez Jr., Jeannie Villanueva, Adela Elkins, Joe Valdez, and Renee Valdez. Mary is preceded in death by her husband, F.H. Borrego, and her parents, Jesus and Trinidad Valdez. The family would like to express their gratitude toward all who have offered condolences, meals, love, and support. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Skipper L. Burns, surrounded by his loving family, left to be with our Lord and Savior on September 8th at the age of 74. Skipper was born in Medill, Oklahoma, on November 13, 1946, to Bill and Jimmy Burns. He attended Medill, Oklahoma Public Schools, studied at Oklahoma State University, and served our country in the United States Army. Skipper met the love of his life, Cheryl, 56 years ago in Lovington, New Mexico. They moved to Midland, where he was managing partner at Horseshoe Operating Incorporated, until his retirement in 2014, where he purchased a ranch in Lampasas, Texas. In addition to his wife, Cheryl, Skipper is survived by his two sons, Johnny and wife Shannon of Kempner, Texas, Stephen and his wife Dana of Lampasas, Texas, and 10 grandchildren. Per Skipper's wishes, there will be a graveside service with his family on September 26th at Lovington Cemetery through Smith Rogers Funeral Home in Lovington, New Mexico. Malachi Black was called home on August 31st. Malachi was born on November 11th to Aqua Black of Oxford, Mississippi, and Anthony Price of Midland. He also has a stepfather, Ronaldo Wilson. Malachi spent many years in the Midland County School District before moving to Mississippi and continuing his education in Lafayette High School. Malachi was preceded in death by grandparents Karen Black, James Dixon, and Raymond Green Sr., all of Midland. Malachi leaves to mourn his son Eason Tyree Jones of New Albany, Mississippi, his parents Aqua Black of Oxford, Mississippi, and Anthony Price of Midland, as well as his grandmother Wilma Green of Midland. Malachi had many special people in his life, including his beloved sister, Kibroshina Black. Malachi was laid to rest on September 22nd at Serenity Memorial Gardens in Midland. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Donna Finn, age 66 of Midland, passed away Sunday, September 20th. Services will be held at 1 o'clock Tuesday, September 29th, at the Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Guy Wayne Fitzgerald, age 69, of Midland, passed away Thursday, September 17th. He was born September 21, 1957, in Midland. Memorial services will be Monday, September 28th, at 4 p.m., at Ellis Funeral Home, with Brother Bob Porterfield officiating. Jack Dotson, age 48, of Midland, passed from this life on September 18th. He was born to Jimmy and Jacqueline Dotson on May 14th, 1972, in Hobbs, New Mexico. He is survived by his wife, Crystal Dotson, daughter, Abby Dotson, parents, Jimmy and Jacqueline Dotson, brother, Joseph Dotson. Funeral service will be held Thursday, September 24th at 11 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Jose Luis Montanez passed away September 17th. Services will be held in his hometown in Chihuahua, Mexico. Survivors include his wife, Maria Guadalupe Quinones. Arrangements are under the direction of Stanton Memorial Funeral Home.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, September 24th, 2020, front page. Council tables creation of PFC by Michael Merlo, M-E-R-L-O at OAOA.com. Some Odessans addressed concerns regarding the creation of an Odessa Public Facility Corporation after council members tabled the decision during a Tuesday City Council meeting. City Manager Michael Marrero previously detailed that the creation of the PFC allows the city to partner with a developer to be able to construct workforce housing that is available to those who can pay market rates, but also those who earn less than 50% of the median income. The PFC would be a corporation made up of city council, which would give council members the ability to work with developers to not only identify locations that would be ideal for the construction of homes, but to be involved in every aspect of that development, Marrero said. Marrero said that the developer, gets to obtain a tax exemption from the city of Odessa, and that is a property tax exemption for 99 years. He said, further explaining that the benefit to the city would be more housing, and the city gets to share revenue generated from the apartment complex, which he said in some cases is more money than property taxes. He also said that at least 50% of the units have to be available to low-income residents. Following council's decision to table the item, some citizens had words regarding public facility corporations around Texas. Odessan Larry Robinson showed up to the meeting to ask council to table the item. He spoke about PFC loopholes for developers to benefit from the programs in other cities. Houston's complaining. They call them stack and pack little boxes, and they write it all off, and they don't pay city taxes, and they don't pay sales tax and development. Then it robs the true developers, he said in an interview, adding that research shows that there's little or no benefit to those needing affordable housing. Robinson said Mayor David Turner approached him prior to the meeting and said that the PFC decision might be tabled, adding that maybe Robinson wouldn't speak. I declined the offer and said I would only be comfortable after a vote to cancel was affirmed, Robinson detailed in an email. Mayoral candidate Javier Hovan also showed up to the meeting to ask council members to think it over. District 4 Councilman Tom Sprawls said in a phone interview that he did not feel comfortable yet with the PFC and would need to do more research. Texas Low-Income Housing Information Service Advocacy Co-Director Adam Pertle said in a phone interview that there are concerns with PFC partnerships with developers because of a lack of restrictions regarding low-income availability. The only real restriction is that 50% of the units have to be available at 80% of the area median income, and that's it. There's nothing in there about bedroom sizes for families. These properties don't need to accept housing choice vouchers. There isn't an affordability period. It really just ends up being a boon for developers, he said. A University of Texas research report detailed the adopted property tax exemption for private apartment developers under Section 303.042F of the Texas Local Government Code, detailing that the exemption's marginal financial returns to PFCs are outstripped by the property tax losses, and also that the exemption fails to serve the state's affordable housing needs because the income restrictions do not require adjustments in household size. The income restrictions utilized at the exempt properties end up largely targeting middle-income renters, making 100% to 115% of the area median income. The study detailed that state law should require local governments to submit annual reports to the Texas Comptroller and local taxing entities regarding apartment complexes under the exemptions, require compliance reviews, including an annual audit, and stated that developers partnering with local governments on PFC projects in this agreement should have to go through a competitive request for a proposal process. Marrero said that the city would bring in a consultant to speak further on the creation of the PFC to address some of the concerns residents may have. The University of Texas study can be located online at tinyu.com/y4wm8lxh. Council also approved an economic development agreement for a $125,000 grant between the Odessa Development Corporation and Gasket and Packings Incorporated, as well as approving the purchase of a command trailer for the Odessa Police Department for $289,036.77. Council also reappointed Richard Gillum, Chris Stanley, and Yervand Mayakin to the Public Art Committee. A new look. Above, members of Odessa Regional Medical Center and Steward Healthcare shoveled dirt during a groundbreaking ceremony at ORMC on Wednesday afternoon. ORMC will be undergoing a $14 million renovation on its maternity service line that is expected to be completed by the summer of 2021. Below, President of ORMC, Stacy Brown, gives the introduction to the groundbreaking ceremony at Odessa Regional Medical Center on Wednesday afternoon. ORMC holds renovation ceremony by Michael Merlo, MMERLO at OAOA.com. Around 35 people visited Odessa Regional Medical Center's West Campus on Wednesday afternoon for a ceremony celebrating upcoming renovations. The $14 million renovation for ORMC's Women's Center will include updates to the West Campus lobby, common areas, operating rooms for women's services, obstetrics emergency department, and other patient areas. ORMC President and CEO Stacy Brown said that she's been excited about this project for a while because it's something that the hospital needs the most. "We've been working on it for so long, so it's really exciting to finally see it come to fruition," she said. Brown said there will be a lot of common area space that will be relaxing for families either waiting or coming to visit their loved ones, and that OB-GYNs will have a brand new designated area to take care of patients on the first floor and two new operating rooms for emergency surgery. "It's really going to help, again, just foster that quality care that we provide already and take it to the next level." Brown said that the renovations will be complete and operational by June of 2021 as she stood at an outdoor podium alongside ORMC staff, as well as Chairman and CEO of Steward Healthcare System, LLC, Dr. Ralph De La Torre. De La Torre said in an interview that Steward is proud to partner with Odessa and be part of this community, and we strive to bring world-class healthcare to Odessa so that no one ever has to leave the Permian Basin to get the best care. Brown said that ORMC, a Steward Family Hospital, was awarded the health grades Labor and Delivery and OBGYN, OB-GYN, Excellence Award for the third year in a row. "Clearly, the quality is already here," she said, "and now we will have the beauty as well." Board members joined ORMC staff and Steward Healthcare System representatives to sign bricks on the West Campus and then donned white hard hats to shovel ceremonial dirt over the site. South Region President at Steward Healthcare, Dr. Sanjay Shetty, said in an interview that this investment is one of many that Steward Healthcare has made and will continue to make in Odessa Regional. "We believe strongly in the strength of the facility and its ability to care for the community," he said, adding that the history of ORMC is based on its women's and infants program. Shetty detailed that Steward also invested around $5 million to ORMC for new equipment, on top of the $14 million investment. Brown said that it's been a while since ORMC campus has been renovated. "I think 2003 was the last time that the entire campus had somewhat of a refresh, and so it's going to be just beautiful. It's going to be a relaxing, spa-like environment for our moms and babies, and we just needed it. It was long past due." County tax rate remains the same. Rodriguez wanted the higher rate. Editor's note: a story in Wednesday's Odessa American was incorrect. The OA regrets the error on the tax rate. OA News at OAOA.com. After county commissioners on Tuesday adopted the county's budget for the new fiscal year, starting October 1st, with an overall $3 million increase in spending and an ad valorem tax rate of 36.5 cents per $100, which is the same as last year. The rate will still mean higher taxes, as most in Ector County have higher appraisals this year. Commissioner Greg Simmons made the motion, and County Judge Debbie Hayes seconded it to keep the rate the same. The vote was 4-1, with Armando Rodriguez voting against it because he wanted the county to have more of a cushion with the higher rate, County Clerk Jennifer Martin said. Court members had been considering a 36.9 cent rate in recent weeks because it was the effective rate that would have raised the same amount of revenues that the current rate produced in the fiscal year ending September 30th. The schedule of 2020-21 expenditures was approved on a 4-1 vote with Commissioners Eddie Shelton from Precinct 1, Greg Simmons from Precinct 2, and Dale Childers from Precinct 3 voting yes, along with Judge Debbie Hayes. Helped considerably by the 1.25 cent sales tax enacted by the voters in November 2 years ago, the new budget is for $64,887,521 in general fund expenditures and $20,051,588 from the sales tax fund, which is used to bolster law enforcement, maintain and rebuild roads, and curb illegal dumping. The total is $84,943,109. The current year budget is for $81,849,488, with $67,143,225 in the general fund and $14,706,263 in the sales tax fund. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 4,727. Ector County negative, 22,250 out of 27,303 tested, with 326 pending. 96 deaths. Recovered, 4,006. Active, 625. Midland County, 3,614 confirmed, 81 deaths. Texas, 719,599 confirmed, with 5,740,674 tested. Total Texas deaths, 15,129. U.S. cases, 6,874,982 total confirmed, and 200,275 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. Quick hits. Pink the Basin. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Pink the Basin's annual luncheon and most of the large gathering third-party fundraisers have been canceled. Those events made up 90% of last year's annual income. To continue offering life-saving diagnostic breast cancer services, PTB is requesting your support or participation in the following Pinking the Basin campaigns. Saturday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., 3rd West Texas Breast Symposium, presented by the Breast Center of Midland Memorial Hospital. October, Run for the Basin, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Wear pink athletic gear throughout October. Donate a set amount or an amount for every mile you run at http://bit.ly/runforthebasin. Proceeds will provide women in the Permian Basin with breast cancer screening services. Share pictures with on Facebook and Instagram using hashtag RunForTheBasin and hashtag PinkingTheBasin. Also, throughout October, EF Outfitters 100% of pink candle sales benefit Pink the Basin, and 5:16 Candles, Texas, 20% of all October sales benefit Pink the Basin. October 1st through 15th, Texas Roadhouse, Odessa. Receive a free appetizer when you make a $5 donation. On October 14th, Pink the Basin receives 10% of sales. October 10th, 2nd RSS Ride for Tatas Motorcycle Breast Cancer Awareness Run. October 12th, Sewell Leader Live with Margaret Feinberg. Free live stream event title, Fight Back with Joy. October 12th through 17th, Press Cafe Dine to Donate Week. All meals are free in exchange for a donation. October 24th, Pink Warrior 5K Walk Run. November 8th, 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., private shopping event. Raffle prizes every 15 minutes. Partial proceeds benefit Pink the Basin. To donate, get help, or for more information, visit pinkthebasin.com. Health Fair. Occupational Health Fair Healthcare Plus, PLLC, has scheduled a health fair from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at Belmont Baptist Church, 1200 East 8th Street. Free services include blood pressure check, heart rate check, weight check, 0-2 check, glucose check, and body mass index. Services available for a cost are blood work $35, sports physicals $25, pregnancy test $5, urinalysis test $5, and others upon request. To RSVP or for more information, call 307-6331 or email admin@occuhealth-plus.com or visit tinyurl.com/yyx8t22u. Those two emails are admin@occuhealth-plus.com and tinyurl.com/yyx8t22u. Trump Parade. West Texans for Trump has scheduled a Trump Parade to begin at 2 p.m. Saturday, starting at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. The parade will end at I-20 Midland. Visit tinyurl.com/y4esdwdx. Roadwork. Above, construction workers guide in trucks for hauling away torn-up asphalt while resurfacing a stretch of Grant Avenue between Interstate 20 and Highway 80 on Tuesday morning. Left, construction worker Mickey Martinez monitors a roadway milling machine as it removes old asphalt and loads it into waiting semi-trucks. Below, construction worker Lawrence Mendoza checks the depth of the grading performed by the roadway milling machine. Photos by Eli Hartman, Odessa American. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, September 24th, 2020. Page 2, read. Supporting the Blue, Dana Moore with Texas Trucking Association and ACB recently treated the Odessa Police Department to lunch, courtesy of photos. Closing prices. Posted, $36.50. Futures, $39.93. Natural gas, $2.125. Benchmark U.S. rose 13 cents to $39.93 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Section A, page 3. PIC Education promoting Fossil Day Art Contest for Students, Community. OA News at OAOA.com. The Ector County ISD Innovation Department has announced an art contest to celebrate the 11th Annual National Fossil Day. The annual celebration gives prominence to the scientific and educational value of paleontology and the interest of preserving fossils for future generations. The National Fossil Day Art Contest is open to any interested person of all ages. Artwork will be judged by a panel of scientists on presentation, quality, originality, creativity, and relevance to and incorporation of the theme, a news release said. One winner will be chosen for each age group, and all national finalists' entries will be posted to the National Fossil Day website. ECISD is hosting its own local version of this competition, with student submissions due by September 28th. All campus winners will be recognized, and one entry per grade level will be selected as a district winner. Anyone from our community can enter the national contest with a deadline of October 2nd. The national winner's artwork will appear on the National Fossil Day Art Contest Winners Gallery starting October 14th. Check the National Fossil Day website to see if your artwork has been selected. To learn more about the contest, visit the ECISD PIC Education webpage, https://www.picedu.com/national-fossil-day-2020. On the net, picedu.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.